And so we all want to experience peace in our lives. Yes? We all want to be loved and to feel loved. We all want to experience health and to have joy in our lives. We want to experience what I call the good. And so the good for you might mean to travel. Or maybe the good to you is to have time to play. Or maybe it's to have a loving relationship. Or maybe to you the good is having a shiny new car or a new pair of shoes. Or maybe it's about having lots of friends. The thing is, for each and every single one of us, what comprises the good, some of those things are the same, and some of them are different than what other people want to have in their lives. And so in class this week, we started You Can Heal Your Life class, and one of the first questions that we did in class was to answer the question, what is it that you want to have in your life that you do not have right now? And so some of the answers that people came up with were things like more free time, or a consistent and regular income, or to see new places, and to meet new people, and to do new things, and of course, greater health. And so I invite you as we go through this talk to just kind of hold in your mind something it is that you want to have in your life that you're not that you are not experiencing or do not have in your life right now. And so Ernest Holmes, who is the founder of this philosophy, says in the Science of Mind textbook, "Our belief sets the limit to our demonstration of a principle which of itself is without limit. It is ready to fill everything because it is infinite. So it is not a question of its willingness, nor of its ability. It is entirely a question of our own receptivity." And so that means that all the good that we could possibly desire is already available in the absolute, in principle, in that invisible realm. All the opportunities we could ever want are already available. All the financial abundance. All the creative ideas or the creative solutions. All the wholeness and the order and the peace and the balance that express as health and as a sense of well-being. All of that is already present and available. And part of that receptivity, he says it's all about our receptivity to the good that we desire. Part of that receptivity is based on what we believe that we deserve. And so, the good that you desire, that thing in your life, do you feel like you deserve it? Or do you feel like you deserve it after you work really hard? Or after you accomplish whatever fill in the blank? Or is there something in you that actually says you'll actually never deserve it because somehow you aren't enough? Or somehow you don't measure up? Or somehow you don't have what it takes in order to deserve having that thing? You know, every one of us, we were all raised with different ideas about deservability, about what we deserve and when we deserve and under what circumstances we deserve and how much we deserve. I know for me, I was really raised with that idea that I deserve after I work really hard. And so that's how I set things up subconsciously in my life, that I have to work really hard before I get the goodies, before I get to play, before I get to have or do whatever it is that I want to have in my life. The thing is, when we are young, we learn from the adults in our life how to feel about ourselves and how to feel about life. And we learn that from the reactions of those people around us. If we, our parents and our families and the adults in our lives tended to be unhappy, we kind of adopt an unhappy attitude in life. If they were frightened, we adopt that as well. Frightened sometimes over the same things that they were frightened of because we learn that, or sometimes just kind of a thing back here that just is this sense of being frightened about life. If they had feelings and carried feelings of guilt and shame, often we adopt that and end up going through life feeling guilty about things and ashamed of things. We adopt the beliefs and the attitudes of those people by what we witness and by how they treat us and what they tell us and how they treat each other and how they interact with each other, what we're told about ourselves and what we're told about life. And the thing is, if we have adopted beliefs that don't really serve us in life, that don't really support us in being who we want to be and having what we want to have, it's not that they're to blame. Louise Hay, in her book, You Can Heal Your Life, says, we are all victims of victims. And they could not possibly have taught us anything that they did not know. They didn't have the tools, and therefore they weren't able to give us those tools that support us in life today. And so by default, what happens is we grow up and we tend to create the same emotional environment that was in the home that we grew up in. We do it subconsciously. We do it because it's what we know. We do it because it's the way we think life is. So we say that we want to feel loved. We say that we want to have a loving relationship. We say that we want to have healthy bodies and that we want to have financial abundance and that we want to travel and that we want to have time to play. But one of the things that holds that good that we desire at bay is the belief that we really don't deserve to have that here and now with the way things are now and with the way that we are now, that we have to do something. Something has to change in order for us to have that. And so Louise Hay says, what we believe about ourselves and life becomes true for us. And most of the time, we don't even know it. It's like the fish swimming in water. We don't even know that's our beliefs. It's just what we're operating out of. And so I look at myself in my early relationships, romantic relationships, and I'm sure some of you heard me share some of that stuff when I was in my late 20s, that I chose people that were not good for me. I chose people that weren't very nice to me and didn't treat me very well. And I had a girlfriend one time, and I remember the first time we ever had plans to get together, this was a romantic dating kind of relationship, that I went to her house and she wasn't home. She had decided to go out. Well, you know what? I was in a 6-year relationship with that person. I kept showing up for more of it and more of it and more of not being treated like I would like to be treated. But it's what I thought I deserved. It's what I witnessed in my house growing up. So we tend to recreate what it was that was going on around us by default because we don't know anything else. I am so grateful for this path that I am on. I am so grateful for my growth. I am so grateful that I have had the realization of my own value and my own worth and my own love ability and my own deservability. All of those things have changed so much. And today I would never put up with that kind of behavior. Never. But it's because I have a different self-perception and different expectations and different requirements, and I believe that I deserve something different. So we create our lives out of our conscious and our subconscious beliefs about ourselves and about life. And so that means to me then, in order to increase the good that we are experiencing in our lives, it requires us to actually believe that we deserve that good in the here and in the now with the way things are and with the way that we are. The truth is, you deserve all the good that there is. And the truth is, I deserve all the good that there is. And the truth is, everyone deserves all the good. And we deserve the good because we are of God. So I'd like to share a story with you. It goes like this. In her early years, Jenny fell into a pattern of long-running battles with her parents. They didn't like the nose ring. They were furious that she stayed out all night with no phone call. Her friends weren't exactly her parents' first choice. One night, Jenny and her folks had a huge fight. "I hate you," she screamed at her father as she slammed the door to her bedroom. That night, she acted on a plan. Once everyone had gone to sleep, she dressed, packed a bag. In the kitchen, she rifled through her parents' wallets and took the credit cards, their cash, and their bank book. she hopped on a train and headed for Sydney. When she got there, she waited for the bank to open. She forged her mother's signature and withdrew $12,500 from her parents' investment account. She got a cab to the airport and used her dad's credit card to buy a ticket to Melbourne. She figured that was the last place her parents would look for her. She arrived in Melbourne and started enjoying the high life. A new group of friends, plenty of booze, late nights, sleep all day, no school, no parents hassling her. It didn't take long till the $12,500 were gone and the credit cards had been canceled. Back home, her parents were frantic. Mom had to start stocking shelves at night to pay off the credit card debt. And the $12,500 that had been set aside for her sister's university fees was gone. The police were notified and the streets were searched. Her parents didn't know what happened and they feared the worst. Meanwhile, down in the streets of St. Kilda, things aren't going well. Jenny's soon addicted to heroin. She's moved into a squat and starts selling herself for sex. One day, she's walking down the street and sees a flyer. Have you seen this girl? Below the heading is a photo of her, at least how she used to look. The flyer has her parents' phone number and asks for anyone with information to call. Jenny rips the flyer down and puts it into her pocket. Months pass and then years. Jenny has been careless with her life. At first, she writes off her sickness to just another bout of the flu. But the illness persists. She goes to the free clinic to discover she's contracted hepatitis C. Not even the brothel wants anything to do with her now. As she sits lonely, tired, and hungry in the squat, she looks at the flyer she saved for the last few years. She thinks back to her previous life. As a typical schoolgirl in a middle-class suburban family, it triggers memories of the family water fight one summer day when she was 12, and of crazy moments dancing together, of her sister's comforting arms at her first breakup. God, why did I leave? She asks herself. Even the family dog has a better life than I do. With tears flowing down her face, she knows that more than anything, she wants to go home. Three phone calls and three connections with the answering machine. She hangs up without leaving a message the first two times. But the third time she says, Mom, Dad, it's me. I was wondering about maybe coming home. I'm catching a train. I'll be at the station tomorrow about midnight. If you're not there, well, I guess I'll just stay on the train till I get to Queensland. The next day on the train, Jenny thinks about the flaws in her plan. What if Mom and Dad were out and missed the message? And what are they going to do if they heard it anyway? After all, it's been 10 years. How are they going to react when they discover that I'm a junkie with Hep C? And if they do show up, what on earth am I going to say? The train pulls into the Newcastle station at 10 minutes past midnight. She hears the hiss of the brakes as the train comes to a stop. Her heart starts pounding. Jenny steps off the train, not knowing what to expect. She looks to her right and sees an empty platform, but she hears someone call her name. Her head whips around, and there's her mom and dad, and her sister, and her aunts, and uncles, and cousins, and grandmother. They're holding a banner that says, Welcome Home, and everyone's wearing goofy party hats and throwing streamers and popping party poppers, and there's her mom and dad running towards her, tears streaming down their faces, arms open wide. Dad, I'm so sorry. I know. Hush, child. Forget the apologies. All we care about is that you're home. And Jenny finds herself awash in a sea of family love that she has not known for 10 years. What did she do to deserve that? We don't have to earn the fact that we deserve. In God, there is no judgment. There's no judgment about what you have to do so that you deserve, about how you have to be so that you deserve, about what has to take place first so that you deserve. There's no judgment in God. There's just the allness of love and of abundance and of infinite good that is available to all of us all the time. Spirit doesn't have those requirements and those judgments. In Science of Mind textbook, Ernest Holmes says, "No one judges us but ourselves. No one gives to us but ourselves, and no one robs us but ourselves. We need not fear God or the devil. There is no devil, and God is love." God is the all, and the all withholds nothing. It couldn't withhold. That would be withholding itself. It can't withhold. And the nature of God, or life, or the creative intelligence of the universe, or whatever you want to call it, is to express. And its desire, life's desire, is to express fully. And what that means to me then is the more that you and I are capable of embodying, the more that you and I are capable of being or of becoming, the greater life gets to express in us and through us. The greater that life gets to express as the good that it is. Does that make sense to you? And it makes me think of Sharon Baker. I don't know if you guys know this, but a few years ago, she really wanted to remodel her kitchen and have a whole new kitchen. But in order to have that new kitchen, she had to believe that she deserved to have that kitchen and that she could actually have it. And the result of Sharon having a new kitchen is that creativity itself has been able to express itself in a greater way through her cooking and through her entertaining and through all that has happened in that kitchen. Love has been expressed in a greater way because of her kitchen, because of the family gatherings that have happened, because of her having friends over for dinner, her having Living Beyond Limits over for potlucks at her house. Love has been made more real and more known because of her kitchen. Joy has been expressed in a greater way because of all the people that have been able to come over since then. And the joy that Sharon and Bruce have experienced in having that beautiful new kitchen. So I cannot not imagine how that could not be the desire of the universe then for Sharon to have this beautiful kitchen, because the universe gets to express more fully. So as we embody those heartfelt desires and believe that we deserve them and move towards them and actualize them in our life, God, life, the universe, the creative intelligence gets to express itself in a bigger way through us. Do you get it? And so I think the answer then, or the solution, is to recognize whatever limiting ideas we have about deserving, when we deserve, or what we have to do first, or how we deserve, or how much, to recognize what your limiting beliefs are about that. Our job is to recognize that we already deserve, that we don't have to earn it, and we don't get it after we fill in the blank, whatever that is, after we do whatever that thing is we think we have to do, after we work really hard, to recognize that it is life's good pleasure to give us the kingdom. It is God's good pleasure to give us the kingdom. The gift has already been made, and all of the good is already available. So will you up your level of deservability? And as a result of upping your level of deservability, you will be living in the flow to a greater degree. You will be experiencing the reality of your heartfelt desires in actuality in your living. And you'll be here living the life that your soul came here to live, giving way to that presence as the fullness of your own being and as the fullness of life. And so blessings to all of you as you walk this path and ever discover more and more of your spiritual, essential, beautiful nature and how much you deserve the fullness of life. Blessings to all of you. So I invite you to join me in an affirmative prayer right now. And so how good it is to answer this call of our own spirits to turn back to that place within us that remembers. and that knows that that infinite presence is right here. That that infinite presence fills this room, and it fills our lives, and it fills our home, and it walks with us everywhere we go and is with us in everything that we do. That it fills us from within and it fills us from without, and it surrounds us and envelops us, and it is this field of good. It is this field of love and of peace and of abundance. It is this field of wholeness and harmony and order and beauty and magnificence. And so I recognize that each and every one of us lives in this field, that we bring this with us as we move through this world, and we bring it into us and through us as we open ourselves. And one of those ways that we open ourselves is to know that we deserve. And so today we step into the truth of our deservability in a whole new way, recognizing that as conduits of spirit, and as emanations of that one, that we are deserving of all the good that there is. For we are here giving expression to that one. And one of the ways we do that is through following our heartfelt desires. And so today we bring spirit into this world in a beautiful and a magnificent way. I know that everything that stands between us and our desires made real right now is either disappearing and fading into the nothingness, or we are getting whatever it is here to tell us, to say to us. And so today, we step forward in the light and as the light, letting go of all false beliefs, letting go of all sense of limitation. And we step forward as these magnificent spiritual beings that we are. And so I know that right now good is pouring itself out into our lives in a way that is so satisfying and so nurturing and so fulfilling. And so it is with that that I say thank you, God, for all of this. It is in that that I rest in gratitude and in appreciation and in joy. And so I release this prayer into that infinite law of the universe, knowing that it is absolutely done, and it is done now. And I say, and so it is.